It's the Deseret News Rise and Shout podcast, episode 309. I'm your host, Adam Mangum. In this episode, I'm joined first by Brandon Gurney of the Deseret News. We talk about the lackluster recruiting class for football, as well as a basketball team that seems to be maybe exceeding expectations a bit. Matt and I then talk about Cougars in the NFL. We talk about the loss to St. Mary's, and we talk about the new offensive coaching staff. This is the Deseret News Rise and Shout podcast. Find this podcast and other great shows at DeseretNews.com/podcast. Follow us on Twitter at BYU_RiseShout and listen to us right now. Welcoming back to the Deseret News Rise and Shout podcast is Brandon Gurney, also of the Deseret News. Brandon, welcome back to the podcast.
Hey, great to be here. Happy New Year to everyone.
Happy New Year indeed. So what the good thing is at this time of year, Brandon, is hope springs eternal for football. And we'll start with football before we get on to basketball. Though maybe not completely with the recruiting class and the national rankings and such of recruiting. So let me get your thought. You've covered BYU for a long time. You've covered recruiting for a long time. The ratings, the rankings of this class that Coach Kalani Sitake has brought in seem a little bit lower than normal, though that'll probably change a little bit before it's all said and done as some other people decide where they're going. Would you say that this class is, in your opinion, significantly below or the ratings are concerning, or is this just one of those cyclical things that probably has a lot to do with coaching changing and BYU having a bad season?
Yeah, I think a little bit of both. Significantly low. I think it's probably the lowest rated class as is by far from what I've covered. I mean, every class seems to have that 4-star guy that you can kind of hang your hat on. Yeah, we won this recruiting battle with this guy. I don't know who that guy is for this class, but I've learned a long time ago that no matter how good pundits or even coaches feel a class may be, you really don't have a lot of idea until at least 2 or 3 years, BYU's case, maybe 3 or 4 years down the line. I do like the offensive line talent. I think they shored up some good bodies there. But beyond that, there's not really that recruit where you can say, yeah, we got this guy, and you can look for this guy to start next year or maybe even the year after. I don't know who that guy is with this class. Obviously, it's not said and done yet. There's a couple of local prospects I really like a lot. And first would be Braden Cosper. I think he has a lot of potential, and I think he was kind of underrated because he played wide receiver in a Bingham system that just doesn't throw the football. I shouldn't say that, but didn't throw the football a lot this year. They didn't really have a good throwing quarterback this year. But I think with a system that really throws the ball well and throws it effectively, I think he'd be an absolute star. And he plays both ways at Bingham, which I think is really significant because it's hard to play both ways at Bingham no matter what caliber of athlete you are. I mean, Harvey Longy didn't play both ways at Bingham, and there's a lot of others. And he played all year at safety. I think that says a lot about his athleticism. Also a star on the football on the state champion basketball team, just a really good athlete. I think when it's all said and done, he might be a guy who plays outside backer, although I do love his ball skills as a wide receiver. So anyway, I'm talking a lot about Braden Cosper. You can tell I really like
that
kid.
I think you're right on that one. And obviously he's thought of well by not just BYU in the recruiting process. So tell me what you think about quarterback, because right now they bring in Stacy Connor, a dual threat quarterback out of Texas, big guy height wise, and there's a bunch of QBs on the roster, people coming back. There's other recruits in the recruiting pipeline, in future classes. A lot of people look at that and they go, gosh, there's a lot of quarterbacks. And at this point, there's no clear starter for next year based on the health of Tanner Mangum and Bo Hodge and all those things. So do you think this is them bringing in Connor and trying to get some other folks? Is this a an indictment of the current QBs, or is this just a matter of course that you got to continually fill that QB pipeline because you just never know how it's going to work out?
Well, I think it might be a little bit of both. I think the signing of Zach Wilson kind of enunciates that. There's not the obvious talent in the program right now. It's just not there. There's not a guy that you can say definitively, yeah, this is going to be our guy next year. I don't know who that guy is. I don't believe Tanner Mangum's going to be fully healthy. But I mean, obviously, it's kind of dicey prognosticating injuries, but coming off an Achilles is a tough deal. And you take a guy that didn't have a lot of confidence last year, that's going to be a tough thing to just kind of hang your hat on. Joe Critchlow showed signs, but I don't think there's anything he showed where it's like, yeah, that's the guy. The best quarterback play I saw all year was when they was with Bo Hodge before he went out against Utah State. I think that was the one game BYU played. It's like, yeah, they're superior than this opponent, and they're getting it. And there's an identity on offense, and then he gets hurt, and then the season just all but ends for him right there. I don't know where he's at. I don't know where what the system's necessarily going to dictate to which quarterback can be most apt to take the starting role. I think Zach Wilson's got a real chance to be the starter next year. I really do. I saw him play in Clemson last year. He got hurt toward the end of the season, but he's a guy that was able to make throws at the prep level that I was really impressed with, where he just wasn't finding the open guy and delivering it accurately, but just putting it in a place where only the receiver could make a play on the ball. I saw that several times with him. I like his talent. I think he can be a guy, and I think he might need to be a guy because I just don't know if that quarterback's in the program right now. I'm not saying he's not. Obviously, we haven't seen Cody Wilstead. He's absolutely an unknown commodity in any regard. And then you have Jaren Hall coming in. So it's going to be, wow, it's going to be interesting. I have no idea what they want. It's totally up in the air. So what do you need there? You need options. You need a lot of options that can compete. And so, yeah, our quarterback's the merrier. I don't think BYU could sign enough quarterbacks because I really don't know if that quarterback's in the program currently.
So obviously the big news coming out of the last few weeks was the hiring of Jeff Grimes as the offensive coordinator, somewhat familiar to BYU fans as he was offensive line coach previously, but has been away from the school for a long time, not been an offensive coordinator, though he's been a running game coordinator and been involved with some pretty good offenses in a decent football conference I've heard of once or twice that might have a couple of good teams in it. But coming in, I mean, do we really have any idea what the offense will look like when it really boils down to it? I mean, because he's coached under a bunch of different offensive coordinators that, quite frankly, have run very different systems. Yeah. Matt Canada's system is different than, you know, before it was at LSU, which was different than what they had at Auburn when he was a coach there. So do we really have any idea what his offense will look like, or are we just guessing?
It's going to be interesting, but you have to go back to what the strengths of the team will be next year, if there are any offensive strengths. Saying that about BYU these days is kind of dicey when you saw that offense last year, but I believe Ulatolotau is going to be back, and I think he's a real talent. I think he's absolutely a guy that you should focus an offense around, especially when you have all the questions on quarterback and receiver. Who's going to play receiver next year? Huge question marks at those positions. So you look at BYU's offense, you have Matt Bushman, who's very good, and I think the offensive line is going to be solid. So I think you might stay with the tight formations and just kind of a ground pounded out type of offense, I think is what you're going to see. I think that's kind of what you saw success with at LSU, and that's kind of his latest model. I think he's going to arrive at BYU. Hey, what do we got here? Oh, we got these question marks. Let's run the football. Let's stay with the tight formations. I guess that'd be my educated guess of where BYU is going to be going. But we'll see what comes about. I think the spread was kind of poo-pooed too much in the light of what BYU can run and what it can produce. So a lot of people don't like what Anai did and all that until he's gone. It's like, wow, it was pretty good, actually. Can we have that back? It's going to be interesting. But as far as hiring Grimes – I think it was an absolute home run. I really do. And being able to get Aaron Roderick as a position coach, I think with the realistic options out there, I don't know how BYU could have done better, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
As far as the realistic names, obviously, a lot needs to be proved, and it's just kind of cosmetic right now. But, man, the optics look fantastic. By bringing in Grimes, it kind of just – you were really wondering where BYU was at and what BYU was going to be able to do, and his commitment to the program, if you know what I'm saying, kind of the commitment of the board of trustees and just the administration of what they were willing to bring in. I think by bringing in a guy like Jeff Grimes, who was making big money at LSU, and Aaron Roderick, I think shows a commitment. And it kind of shows that, yeah, BYU's still in play. BYU still is the school that can do this independent thing. That I don't want to say contend, because I think that's a really far ways off still. But I think of being a quality program that can beat name opponents, I think that kind of shows that, yeah, BYU's still in that game. BYU can still be that team that makes some noise and might even sniff the national rankings. A long way from that, but I think the start of that, the foundation, by bringing in Grimes, Aaron Roderick, Fessica Satake, who I think is an exciting up-and-coming coach, and Grimes' guy, Pugh, I kind of really surprised everyone when Empey was let go, but it kind of makes sense where Grimes, who's an offensive line coach, wants his own offensive line guy. It kind of makes sense. So,
yeah.
But, yeah, I as far as the realistic options, I don't know how BYU could have done better. I really don't.
Well, and you pointed out, I mean, there's certain things. I know a lot of people wanted a Division I offensive coordinator. I shouldn't say Division I. That's like marks me as an old man.
Yeah.
FBS offensive coordinator to come over. But in the history of BYU, BYU's never had unless you want to consider Croton, who called a lot of the plays when he was the coach, but you had to entice him with the head job, right? I mean, when Anai came, he was the offensive line coach at Texas Tech. Sounds a little bit familiar. And Doman came in from the staff, and Detmer came from high school. So I agree with you. I think this is about as good as you could hope to get. Let's shift gears to basketball here for a second. Obviously, they're coming off this loss to St. Mary's. Disappointing. Had chances to win it in regulation. But let me throw this question at you. At the beginning of the year, I thought they were going to get blown out by St. Mary's twice and by Gonzaga twice, and I thought they'd have five or six losses by now. So that was my assessment. Is this team overachieving from your perspective based on the talent that's on the roster, or do you think that the talent on this roster that Rose and company have got them about where they should be?
I think they're overachieving a little bit. I do. You have to do it relative to last year, which I think is kind of what everyone does, just because it's the most ready form of reference. But I think what was really interesting is I talked to Randy Bennett after the St. Mary's game, and I asked him to compare BYU to last year's team. He says, well, they're not as talented. I just kind of like, just an obvious thing, and Eric Meekin and Nick Emery-Gon, they're not as talented. He says, but it's weird. They're just better. And he used the word weird, just like, I don't understand how he's getting this out of this team when he got what he did out of last year's team. And I think it's a really positive thing. It's BYU's valuing possessions. They're valuing defense more so than they have in a very long time. And you have to point to Hugh Schroyer. I mean, that's the big difference. That's the big change that came within this program. And I think it's a positive thing when you look at the football program of just how much a different coaching philosophy and culture can bring wins almost immediately. Obviously, BYU can't lose to St. Mary's at home if it wants to make its ultimate goal. But when you compare to where it was last year to St. Mary's, worlds of difference. And You're seeing players really step up. I think a really positive thing that the three guys that are contributing far more than I think anyone ever dreamed of would first be Luke Worthington, And then Dalton Nixon, who's unfortunately been shelved with injury, but I think both those guys came out. But probably the most significant impact, but I don't think anyone was expecting, was Peyton Dastrup. And when you look at his minutes, he's got to be playing more, you think.
Oh, yeah.
And I think he will play more because he's been very, very efficient. And it's not just on the offensive end. On the defensive end, there was a point in the game against St. Mary's where he had three consecutive defensive stops where he contributed to steals. One, he absolutely stole the ball from their big guy, Landale, and he blocked a shot. And if he can provide that consistent defensive presence, which I did not think you'd see from Peyton Dastrup initially. I thought offensively was going to be pretty much it, but I was really impressed with how he was able to defend against St. Mary's. This guy needs minutes, and I'm not just talking over 15 minutes. I think he's a 20-minute at least per game guy. I still like him coming off the bench. I think that's going to be a good thing, but I'd like to see him finish games. I'd like to see him finish out, and I think he's getting there. He's risen to the occasion every single time, and I think it's a really great story because he's a guy that, man, last year was just like, oh, this guy, no, he's not going to get it, right?
No,
But then you look at his,
yeah.
but you look at his recruiting credentials. He was a four-star guy that had some big offers, so he has obvious talent, and he's starting to realize that. And coming back from mission's not an easy thing for big guys. And I think that might be the only explanation right there. He's just a year removed from his mission service, so there you have it. So I
Yeah.
think that's an exciting development for this team.
Yeah, I agree. I don't I didn't think I didn't anticipate him being the contributor he was at all. And you answered my question, which was going to be who do you think has, I mean, obviously Bryant and Yoeli Childs have been the best two players on the
Yeah.
team. But you hit on something. What I mean, is it the coaching? Is it chemistry? Is it both? Because I mean, last year you had one of the best big men in BYU history and couldn't put it together with a lot of these same players. Now, a few new guys in the mix, but a lot of these same players. I mean, was there just a chemistry issue? And I don't mean like off the court. I just mean on the court. Were these guys just not clicking, or is this, you mentioned it before, just a matter of changing the way they were coaching these guys and more about the guys calling the shots on the bench than the guys making the plays on the court?
Yeah, well, I think it's the system. I just think it's the culture that these guys understand that last year just did not work for whatever reason. It didn't really make sense why it didn't work. There were a lot of games where I just watched. It's like, what? What am I watching here? I don't understand what they're trying to do. It doesn't make sense. And I think that team understood that. And I think they have an assistant coach that was able to realize that. And I think together it's just brought a new attitude, a different culture that I think has just been really positive for this team. But I don't want to understate the significance of Elijah Bryan. This is a guy that everyone was singing his praises and prizes. Oh, this guy's just amazing. He's incredible. And we were never, and we're seeing that guy. He's here. He's finally arrived. He wasn't able to be here because of injury last year, but I think his impact's been huge. And a guy that's just exceeded expectations on every level is Yoeli Childs. I was really high on him in high school. I thought he was underrated. I didn't think he was as underrated as he's proven to be because he's just risen to the occasion. I did not believe that he would have that big of an impact as a freshman. And I thought he would see a lot of struggles as the primary focus as a postman without Mika. Not at all.
Yeah.
He's a guy that's gone head to head, and I look back at just what I know about this kid, and I feel guilty that I didn't see this coming. I tell the story a lot. Maybe I've told it on this podcast, but I remember over the Las Vegas Bowl, Bingham played in a tournament in Las Vegas that I was able to watch, and I watched Yoeli Childs go against 2 4-star 7-footers that were, I think one signed with UCLA, and I think both of them signed with UCLA now that I think, but they were both legitimate guys. Yoeli Childs was the best player on the court. He was dominating these guys. And you want to qualify, you want to say, oh, it's just an out-of-state tournament. No, I'm done with qualifying things with Yoeli Childs. He's really really good, and he's just exceeded expectations every step of the way. And it's just fantastic the story he's developed into. And whereas now you think he's a guy that could maybe play at the next level. I mean, undersized has kind of been the knock against him, but man, watch him against Jock Landale. He's not really having that big of a problem. So
it's
an exciting thing, and he's such a nice kid. He's such a well-composed kid. Really easy to cheer for, and I'm really excited for him. I'm really excited about what he's been able to do at BYU.
Oh, him and Elijah Bryan are just having just amazing seasons, and you know, I thought they'd both be better than last year, right? Progression and all that, but I think they've taken a leap, and obviously Elijah being healthy might be the biggest factor for him as opposed to, you know, maybe just development on the case of Yoeli Childs. Well, Brandon, thanks for coming on. This was a great conversation. I think I learned a couple of things, so hopefully the listeners did as well. And we're always interested in hearing your opinion, having covered both these teams and recruiting and different things for a long time. So we appreciate it, and we'll have you on again soon.
Awesome. Always love being on.
So Matt, how much do you like root beer? Do you like root beer?
Oh, I like me some root beer. You know I like me some root beer.
I know you do. Our family, somebody at work had told me every year they do kind of like a root beer tasting.
And I'm intrigued. Tell me more.
They find like a bunch of root beers and then randomly sample them, have somebody kind of officiate it, and then you judge what your favorite root beers are. So on New Year's Day, I went to Hy-Vee, a local grocery store, bought 7 different kinds of root beer, and then came back and we did that as a family. And my oldest daughter does not like soda. She doesn't like anything carbonated, so she officiated.
So that entails just making sure that you're blind tasting the drinks and like eating a cracker in between them, or what?
Correct.
So then she keeps track of which one you drank and writes down your score so you don't know what you're doing.
Correct.
Excellent. You write down
Score. Now, the 3-year-old, quite frankly, she struggled with this entire process, except for the part of the drinking of the root beer. She got that down great. Or telling us, I don't like this one. Which, by the way, only happened with 1 out of 7. She drained her little cup the other 6 times without any problem.
What was the one she didn't like, if I could ask?
There was I forget the brand, it was salted caramel root beer, and nobody liked it. I know that kind of sounds like it could be good, and when I bought it, I thought it could be. It was, everybody disliked it.
It doesn't sound like it would be good to me.
Well, I thought it could be interesting, so I picked it up and we tried it.
If you're going to do root beer tasting, you got to branch out a little bit. I understand. But yeah. I think you were destined for failure there.
Yeah, we probably were. Now, we did not have some of the classics. There was no A&W in there. There was no IBC. And the reason just was simple. They just didn't happen to have them in glass bottles where I was doing it. And I guess next year my wife was saying, well, we could get like some type of divider. So, because I was like, well, everyone's going to know it's the A&W because it came out of the can, right? And they're going to see it. But we'll come up with a better system and throw in some other popular ones. IBC, they just didn't happen to have it at the store I was looking for. But the winner was local favorite Killebrew.
Interesting.
Which is kind of a more bitter tasting one. There was also Sioux City Root Beer, Frosty, which was quite good. And then Dad's, which maybe you've had Dad's.
I've had Dad's and I've had Frosty.
Well, you've had Frosty. Frosty's good.
Mm-hmm. Frosty's surprisingly good. The cartoony label on it is a little misleading.
It is a little bit misleading.
I started telling you something root beer related.
You can go ahead.
We stayed with some friends over New Year's.
Yes.
And I mentioned to them about Virgil's Root Beer, which you are familiar with.
Yes, I am familiar with, which and we also was to, not part of the our testing, taste testing.
And, how I used to, when I was a kid, I used to ride my bike over to this store, and I'd buy some Virgil's. I'd sit there, I'd drink it, ride my bike home and all this. And you know, and how we had it when I graduated from BYU, our younger brother Sam showed up with some Virgil's and we celebrated with a Virgil's outside the Marriott Center. you know, and how Virgil's has been at all these big events in my life. So then we took off and did some stuff with family. We came back. There was a 4-pack of Virgil's in their fridge.
That sounds like good friends, man.
Oh, the best kind of friends. The best kind of friends. So then, so that night, I cracked one open, and then my oldest cracked one open, and then my wife cracked one open. So then that left just the last bottle for the two of them to share. I felt a little bit bad about that because they hadn't had it before, and they enjoyed it. How can you not enjoy it? It's Virgil's.
How can you not? Virgil's is quite good. I think it would have fared well in our little competition. But Matt, as much as I love some root beer.
Oh, there it is.
You know what I love more? Nice cold Dr. Pepper right out of the fridge. Or in my case, in Minnesota, I could just put it outside. Actually, I couldn't put it outside. It would be frozen.
Hey, but do you know what else? Do you know what else I tasted this week for the first time?
Ah, that's good. What?
So, you know the Coke that comes in the green cans?
Oh, yeah. Coke Life or whatever.
Coca-Cola Life? Coke Life?
Yeah,
I've had it before. So, I had a Coke Life. It was delicious. Okay. But what this friend of mine is doing is he's putting ginger in the Coke Life and stirring it in.
Like actual ginger?
Like real ginger, like minced. And it's got, and I don't know, it's like, it's, so it's in a little jar. So it's like minced ginger and it's got some water or something in there. So he'd take like a, I don't know, half a teaspoon or something, not a ton, and toss it in there and stir it in. It was delicious. I didn't drink it. After that, I didn't touch Diet Mountain Dew all weekend.
Hmm.
It's crazy, right? It's crazy. You know how much Diet Mountain Dew I drink.
An obscene amount.
Obscene is the right word.
Obscene. Obscene amount. Well, you know, I used to drink that much Dr. Pepper, but then I lost some weight. All right, Matt. Well, Happy New Year to everybody. And we're going to jump right from this to the CougarFan.com Cougars in the News.
Cougars in the News!
Get all of your BYU sports news at CougarFan.com. Matt, the NFL ended with a flurry, right? We got, you know, the wild card. Patriots are probably going to win another Super Bowl. Just thought I'd throw that in there. But we had some BYU players have some really good seasons, Matt. So let's talk about that. And I'm not going to do the Mayor Quimby from The Simpsons as Roger Goodell this time. We're going to do something different. I don't know what it is, but we're doing
Mayor
something
Quimby
different.
Oh, that's what it is. It's Mayor Quimby.
Oh, it's,
I remember
totally,
a couple weeks ago, you're like, I don't even know what this voice is anymore. It is. It's Mayor Quimby.
It originally started as somebody from Jersey, and now it turned into, which, by the way, makes no sense because Roger Goodell does not sound like he's from Jersey.
I don't know where he's from. Nobody knows where he's from.
I know where he's from. He's the spawn of Satan.
Yes. So that's where I was going.
Yeah. H-E double hockey sticks, bro. Let's start with Ziggy Ansah. Okay? He had injury-marred season to start, and then he gets 6 sacks in the last 2 games to finish with 12, 8th in the NFL, and he missed a lot of time. And some of the games he was in, quite frankly, just not effective because he was limited physically. Matt, Ziggy could become, maybe already is, the best former BYU NFL player on the defensive side of the ball.
Ooh, that's a full out topic right there. We could do.
We could do that in the future, and we should. We should.
But Ziggy definitely is in that conversation.
Oh heck yeah! And
even now, even if you take out what I believe his ceiling is.
Yes, he could retire tomorrow. Yeah, he could retire tomorrow and be a part of it. Matt, Jamal Williams, in his rookie year, basically doesn't play a whole ton, some of it early on in the season because of injuries, some of it because they decided to go with other players. He finishes also with a flurry, has more than 800 yards in total offense, 6 touchdowns. Matt, Jamal had a good rookie year, more yards than both of us expected him to have.
Yeah.
Now, granted, unfortunately, it was not a good year for the Green Bay Packers, but that wasn't Jamal's fault.
No, I mean, they had tough luck on the injury to Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah.
You know, the Packers are a good team, and they'll bounce back over this, especially now that they've got a running back.
Yes.
You know, which was a big problem for them in their 2016 campaign.
Correct, correct. So it'll be good. Daniel Sorensen, playing for the Kansas City Chiefs, steps in after some injuries and plays a ton this year, finishing with 89 tackles, 1.5 sacks, 5 tackles for loss, 6 pass defenses, and an interception. Matt, Sorensen went from basically kind of a role player and special teams guy to a full-time guy this year and had a very nice season.
Yeah, I mean, this is a guy who, coming out of BYU, no fanfare, no real expectations. You know, and to put together a season like this, I mean, this is a feature defensive player type of year.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And on a team that, you know, well, started off really good.
Well, maybe. And their coach dresses up like Santa. I mean, who's got it better than them?
But, I mean, they're a playoff team. So, you know, certainly a good year for Mr. Sorensen. Matt, Kyle Van Noy had a great year, a little marred towards the end because of injuries and not getting back on the field. And quite frankly, I think had they been contending for a playoff spot, he probably comes back a little sooner. Played a little bit this past Sunday, but not a ton. I think they're trying to keep him healthy and try to get him full force in a couple of weeks when whoever ends up coming to Foxborough to play the Patriots. But this is the year I thought he would have, you know, except for the injury part of it, based on his play in the playoffs last year for the New England Patriots.
And this is the Kyle Van Noy that we all expected to see.
Yes, and on a defense that looked terrible at the beginning of the year, but
struggled,
but looked a lot better in the second half of the year. Which, by the way, haven't we learned this with Belichick? The first half of the year is not really that relevant.
Doesn't mean much at all.
I mean, they're just going to try to win some games and then figure it all out for the backside. And Matt, the thing we expected, we all knew was going to happen, Taysom Hill, special teams player. 4 tackles this year. We all knew that was coming. We knew he was going to be really good tackling people.
I'm not surprised that he has a couple, that he can make tackles, right? And his form doesn't, you know, the first time you look at it, you're like, oh, geez, don't hurt yourself, dude. But he looks like he knows what he's doing. They're running him through some drills.
Here's the thing, Matt. He is not going to play quarterback in the NFL on a regular basis. I don't believe that still, despite what the announcers said that Sean Payton said.
If Sean Payton thought that Taysom Hill was their quarterback of the future with Drew Brees, how many years does Drew Brees have in the NFL? 15?
Yeah, he's got maybe 1-2 seasons left.
Okay. So if you have Drew Brees, who's got maybe a couple of seasons left, and you think that Taysom Hill is the heir apparent to Drew Brees, you would not send him down on kick coverage.
But here's what I do think happens.
You wouldn't do that.
Matt, next year he's a wide receiver.
I think they'll, yeah.
I think they're going to ask him.
Receiver or whatever it is, they're going to put him out on the field.
He is going to play next year, and I think the Green Bay Packers made a massive mistake by letting him go because I think he's going to be a productive NFL player.
What's interesting is, what I'd be interested to know is this. Did the Packers approach Taysom Hill about playing other positions? And he said that he wanted to play quarterback. You know, there was some discussion about that going into the combine and the pro days and all this. And he said, no, I want to be a quarterback. And have the Saints somehow been able to sit him down and say, hey, look, like, we believe you have a future in the NFL, but it's not going to be a quarterback. Will you make some adjustment here and let us see what else we can do with you? And for whatever reason, he's now willing to do that because he sees the writing on the wall and doesn't want to get released by a second team.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't know. Is that what happened? I don't know.
I don't know. I don't know either, but I think he's playing next year as a special teamer / potentially wide receiver punt return. I mean, you get this guy in open space. We saw it in the preseason with the Packers, and of course we saw it for years in college. If he's healthy, he is extremely hard to tackle. He's extremely fast, and he's got some of the best field vision on where to run that I've ever seen as a football fan. Right? I'll still make this argument. He's the best running back in BYU history. I know that's technically not true because he played quarterback, but I still think he's the best running back in BYU history. All due respect to Jamal and other great running backs. Matt, let's talk men's basketball now. All right.
Oops.
So you open up with the win against Portland, and then St. Mary's comes, and who cares about Portland? Let's talk about St. Mary's. All right. Here are a couple questions. We're not going to rehash the entire game. It's almost a week old. It's almost a week old now. Not quite. Andre Hutchins asked this question. If you could call the last play for the last shot of the BYU-St. Mary's game, what would you drop? And then John Nielsen asks I'm going to paraphrase because these were both on Facebook and John's question is long. But basically it comes down to this from John. John objects to, he says that Dave Roach got outcoached in the last 3 minutes of regulation and overtime. I don't know about the overtime, but I do think he got outcoached in the last 3 minutes of regulation. True or false for you?
Yeah, that may be true.
Okay. John particularly did not like his lineup. He did not like McKay Cannon and Zach Seljaas at the end. He would have liked to seen Dastrup and Jashire Hartnett in there. So Matt, these are related to me. And the reason is because if I'm answering Andre's question about the last play, I don't know about Hartnett. I'm actually not sure I would put him on the floor. I think I would take Seljaas off and put Dastrup on the floor. And what I would do is I would draw up a play where a Bryant has the ball in his hand and is creating, and you've got Dastrup and Hawes potentially there to shoot threes, and obviously Childs there to take some space and potentially get the offensive rebound. What do you think, Matt?
See, that's interesting, and I don't think what you're saying is crazy, but when I looked at this question, I had the exact opposite opinion. So I would leave Seljaas on the floor. I'd take McKay Cannon off and put Hardnett on. But if I could draw something up, I probably have Hawes take that shot.
Okay. And I'm fine with that. My problem with Seljaas this year is he's just not shooting well. And if he doesn't shoot well, he can be on the floor. He doesn't bring in a lot of other things.
That's the gold he brings to the table, right? Is shooting. And if he's not doing it, then you've got to figure something else out. Yeah, I don't know what you do there, but clearly as John Nielsen points out here, inconsistent is probably being kind.
Yes, inconsistent is probably being kind. I mean, if you go to, and I thought I had these up, and I apparently closed the window. Everybody wants to know about my problem surfing the web, Matt.
Everybody likes to listen to you click through web pages.
Yes, it's kind of a rise and shout.
It's extremely exciting. It's a rise and shout tradition.
Yeah, it's a tradition, Matt. We can't defy tradition. Right now, Zach Seljaas is contributing in some other ways, but certainly the shooting is a massive struggle, right? He is contributing in some other ways, but the 32% from the free throw line when you're supposed to be a sharpshooter. But to be fair, Hawes is at the same spot.
Yeah, and now that I'm looking at the stats, what I said about Hawes is crazy.
Yeah, he's not, he's not having... Hawes
so you've got to have
Bryant.
So Bryant's got to take the shot.
Well, and that's what John is saying. He thinks you should have Hartnett on the floor, creating off the dribble, and that could potentially leave Bryant open for the shot.
Right.
Right.
That's why I put Hartnett on.
I just think Hartnett is, he's okay. I don't know that I want the ball in his hands at the end. I get what everybody's saying because I do think you want Bryant taking the shot, but Bryant also shoots 54% on two-pointers. He can get to the hoop, right? So I kind of like, and I still believe in Hawes, and maybe this is unfounded, that I believe in Hawes more of a shooter than Seljaas.
Well, that's what I'm saying because 2 seconds ago I believed in Hawes more than Seljaas as a shooter, but statistically there's really not much. The difference is immaterial.
Yeah, the difference is immaterial at this point. And obviously right now three-point shooting is an issue because you've got Bryant shooting at a high level and you've got Dastrup in a very and Cannon on a much smaller sample size shooting at good levels, and everybody else is not. So, you know, this is not a die and live and die by the three-point team, right? This is really a team that's going to live and die by whether they can create inside that three-point line and then get Bryant to hit some on the outside. So Matt, let me ask you this, and I talked about it earlier in the show with Brandon Gurney. Matt, why isn't Dasher playing more? Like, every time I watch them, he is clearly one of the three or four best players on the court for BYU. I am not understanding why he's not. Right now he's playing minutes per game is what, like
3.8? No, that's not right. Sorry, I'm looking at the wrong column.
You're looking at the wrong column. But anyway, it's kind of ridiculous right now.
Like 8 minutes a game.
Yeah. He's playing like 8 minutes a game. I don't understand, Matt. He's one of the better players on the team.
So is this, like, you know, we've talked about this year. Is this the reverse of what we used to talk about, how Rose would get a few games into conference play before we really started to see things settle out? And this year we felt like the starting lineup and the rotation settled out really early. And now what we're going to say is he settled out too early, and now he's stuck in this rotation without giving Dastrup a chance, who's showing some flash right now.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at it, his minutes have been hurt by the fact that early on he hardly played at all, right? And he's playing right now between 10 and 14 minutes. I think what you're saying is spot on in that I think this is a point where, for some reason, the coaching staff has not figured it out, that he probably needs to take some minutes from Seljaas, because they want Seljaas to be shooting 40-some-odd percent from the three-point line, but he's not.
Right.
You know, and some people say they don't play the same position, and they don't. They play it differently. But the other portion is, according to the Sports Reference stats right now, the defensive Dastrup has been our best defensive player, as well as being one of our better offensive players. So you put those together, and he's just got to play more. And I think if he played more against St. Mary's, we may be having a different conversation about this game. So does this change how you feel about this team, this loss, for better or worse?
You know, we've been saying that they would probably lose to Gonzaga twice and split against St. Mary's. This just means that they're going to have to go and beat St. Mary's on the road. It doesn't necessarily change what I see as the potential for this team, except for the way that this went down at the end. You know, and we've made some reference here to the last few minutes of the game, and you look at it in the overtime, right? If you scroll down, if you just go to the stats that the BYU Sports Athletic Department puts out, and you look at score by periods, we've scored 510 points in the first and 621 points in the second half, right?
Yes.
So we're scoring a lot more in the second half. We've outscored our opponent by about 100 points in the second half. And then you look at what happened in overtime. It's like we should have been, you know, we were showing statistically strong second half performance.
Yes.
And then you get into this overtime, and I feel like the wheels came off.
Yeah. Yeah. It was not great.
So in that sense, it changes how I feel about the team. But if I helicopter up here and just think overall, what did I think this team's potential was a week ago, and how do I feel about that today? I don't know that it's drastically different.
It makes me feel a little better because they actually hung with St. Mary's. Right? Like, that was their game to potentially win. It stinks because they didn't actually do it and there are no moral victories. But there actually are when you're looking at tournament resumes. You know, close losses to good teams is better than getting blown out, right? That being said,
yeah, but at
they
this
needed
point,
the win.
They need. That's right.
They needed the win, right? So the moral victory is not sufficient. Like you said, now they've got to go on the road and get the win. But I feel like they can, right? Was there anything
it's
you saw?
It's definitely a team they can beat. Yeah. That game told me that they could beat that team.
Yeah, they could beat this team. Now, when they play Gonzaga in a few weeks, more than a few weeks, that's when we're going to find out, because I think Gonzaga's a step above St. Mary's. Newsflash. Breaking news there.
They might be just a little better.
They might be a little better. So I look at that and I say, okay, there's something there. But right now, if you look at them, Matt, they're winning the games they're supposed to win, right? They lost to UT Arlington and they lost to Alabama. Now, the Arlington loss is looking worse because they haven't been as good. But, you know, the Princeton win is looking better than it did maybe a month ago. And obviously, the Utah win was important and they needed to have that. But right now, there isn't a bad loss yet, right? Now, is that coming up? I don't think so, Matt. I don't think they're. I mean, obviously, if you look at the upcoming schedule, and we haven't talked a ton about the conference yet, but San Francisco and San Diego are the other two teams that are decent. Okay, that you should be able to beat San Francisco and San Diego both. But outside of that, I don't think they lose to any of those other teams. I think this is a different team than the last 2 years. I don't think they're going to lay eggs against teams they should beat.
So you're ready to back off of what we've been saying is that they drop one of these other conference games to, you know.
I think they drop one of the four to San Diego and you at San Francisco. The season's just too long, and those teams are just good enough where they can pull it off. I mean, and that could happen as fast as this week, right? Because they're playing San Francisco
on the road.
On the road. That could be it. Now, I've been to that high school gym. I mean, that college gym.
Yikes.
And seen a game there. Was that just last year? Was that 2 years ago when Emory just lit them up? And I was there. I can't remember now. But you know, you look at San Francisco, they have this first-year guy that's Solely Bohm, if I'm saying his name right. 15 points, 6'3" guard. He's gonna be a handful for us. And then they've got a few other decent players. You know, this could be it against San Francisco. But I'm predicting they win both the games this week, man. I think they win both games.
I think they come home with this road trip with two wins.
Yeah, I think they beat San Francisco and then Pacific's not very good. And then of course, you know, they. Like I said, that first Gonzaga game is a month away, you know, at Gonzaga. And then St. Mary's, they will have played St. Mary's twice before they play Gonzaga. And that St. Mary's game on the 25th of January looms large for their chances at making the tournament. They need that victory. And heck, they probably need a win against Gonzaga, too.
They want to go to the tournament, yeah.
Yeah, so right now, how are you feeling about the tournament temperature check? You cold?
I'm cold.
You're still cold.
I think this is a team that can beat St. Mary's. May beat St. Mary's. But I don't see them beating Gonzaga because you know you play them the first game's on the road, you know, and that's a tough place to play.
Yep.
And then the last game is you know it's the final game of the season. While it is in Provo. Gonzaga is going to need that win because if Gonzaga drops that game at that point, you know they'll go ahead and win the tournament and probably still get in to the NCAA tourney, but the seeding will be an issue.
Yep, they're going to want to do that, and obviously they've already got three losses this year. This is not last year's team, right? So they need they can't suffer some quote unquote bad losses from a tournament standpoint. Now, to be fair. The three losses are to Florida, Villanova, but the one against San Diego State is the one that's gonna haunt them a little bit. Not that San Diego State is terrible, but they should have had that one. But anyway, all right, Matt, let's talk football. Since we last talked, Jeff Grimes, the new offensive coordinator, added staff, and let's talk about that. Okay. Tim Jacobson via email. Now, by the way, hashtag climb on in, I believe John Nielsen had that, and did Andre, and I didn't bring it up. And the other thing Andre brought up is The Last Jedi is still bad, and then he did the winking emoji. No, it's not, Andre. I like that movie. I've seen it twice now.
Why is he such a hater?
You can listen to his backseat director's podcast. He lays it out in a very coherent form. I just disagree with his opinion, which is fine. He's disagreed with me before, and you have some huge feud with him where you don't even like the guy. So what do you care about?
We do have beef. I'm gonna go listen to his podcast so that we can put some meat behind this beef.
Yeah. Put some meat behind the beef. That sounds weird. Don't say that again.
That was extremely awkward.
So if you could, if you want to climb on in, hashtag climb on in the tweet bag, you can do it on Twitter at @BYU_RiseShout. You can do it on Facebook, facebook.com/RiseAndShout, which most of our comments, tweet bag questions have come off of Facebook today. Or you can do it like Tim. We're about to read his in a second. Did it on old fashioned email, riseandshoutpod@gmail.com. One word, riseandshoutpod@gmail.com. Tim asked this. Is the hire of A-Rod and Fessy more similar to the Magnificent Seven or the Three Amigos? To Han Solo or Lone Star? To Sean Connery or Mr. Bean? Willing to give Fezzik the Giant a shot? I think he means Mr. Satake. Wow. I guess I just don't like A-Rod because he smells of the U and therefore probably cabbage, Tim said.
I got lost here because when he said A-Rod and the U, I thought he was talking about A-Rod, Aaron A-Rod,
no.
And the University of Miami.
No.
That's A-Rod Roderick. And U.
Roderick and Cabbage. Anyway, looks like Grime is, anyway, it smells like cabbage. I don't know why the University of Utah smells like cabbage, but it probably does, actually. Here's the thing, Matt. I love the Magnificent Seven or the Three Amigos. Look up here! Look up here! You just killed the Invisible Swordsman. What other Three Amigos quotes?
Lip balm?
Would you say I have a plethora of piñatas? A plethora? F.A.?
He's infamous. That's more than famous.
Would you like to kiss me on the veranda? On the mouth would be fine. It's such a good movie. Three Amigos. So I don't know what he's. I guess what I'm saying is.
I don't know what he's getting at.
I love Magnificent Seven. I also love the Three Amigos.
Yeah, but if you look at his comparison here, like Han Solo and Lone Star, Sean Connery and Mr. Bean, I think he's laying up like serious, intense, action against, kind of a comic version of that same thing.
So here's the thing.
That's right. That's in case you missed it, Mangan,
I don't
that's
know
what he's laying up.
I don't know what to do with Roderick either, Tim. I really don't. Right? He's a BYU guy, coached at U, but so what? So did Kalani,
so
right?
Satake.
But I think he's kind of joking with that, except for the cabbage piece, which I think is true. I don't know. I'm willing to give Grimes and Kalani a if not a pass, like the benefit of the doubt. That maybe because Roderick was at the U where they had not a very good offense and he was the co-offensive coordinator there. He was in a weird situation and I'm not exactly sure you can blame him for the struggles that the University of Utah had that year.
And that was when Erickson was there, right? I mean, I don't follow their coaching carousel real closely, they just went through a weird period there with their offense, right?
Yeah,
they didn't have a good identity, and the staff was weird.
Yeah, and as we've talked about before, I think Roderick and Fessy, these two are the heir apparents. I think they are the offensive coordinators in training for when, inevitably, Grimes goes on to a different opportunity. Right? These are the two. It'll be interesting to see how that pans out. Matt, any other thoughts on the new offensive coaching staff? I mean, no surprises here that Detmer's not coming back, right?
No, no shock. I'm with you. I'm really giving them the benefit of the doubt and see what they do. I'm excited about Grimes.
I am super excited about Grimes. I think, to answer Tim's question, this will be more like the Magnificent Seven, Han Solo and Sean Connery, than it will be like the Three Amigos, Lone Star. or Mr. Bean.
He went heavy on the movie references.
We've just been jammed. Raspberry jam. Only one man would dare jam me.
Lone I'll just have to find star. Myself a new giant.
Yeah, yeah. This
don't
is
say
good.
That, Pacini, please.
By the way, 30th anniversary. My wife of Princess Bride. My wife for Christmas got me the 30th anniversary hardcover edition of the book Princess Bride. It's beautiful, great artwork. Has an introduction that by William Goldman talking about how awesome Andre the Giant was. It was great. So
that's yeah. pretty cool.
Matt, the only other thing to come out that happened right after we had a show last time was early signing day. Matt, this is not a great recruiting class so far, and it's not likely to change between now and when everything's said and done. I chalk this up to mostly having a terrible season.
Yeah.
Are you worried about anything beyond that? Or is this just you were terrible and people decided to go someplace else because they don't want
to? You're terrible and you had to change your coaching staff. Those things are going to hurt you in recruiting. And the way to fix that is you have a good season next year and the staff instills some confidence in the players and the parents in whose homes they're going to be during this summer and after the season. That's how you solve the problem. You got to go out there and win some football games. And make people feel like they're going to give these kids a chance to go somewhere and thrive. That's the only way you fix this.
Okay, so I talked with Brandon Gurney about the quarterback situation, Matt. Two more quarterbacks come in. Zach Wilson out of Draper, Utah, and Stacey Connor out of Wiley, Texas. Matt, who's the quarterback next year? Because it's not going to be Tanner. I just, with the Achilles, I'm going to assume at this point he's off the board. So assume he's off the board. Is it Bo Hodge?
If he's healthy right now, that's who I would say. But I don't, I've got no data on these other guys.
Okay. What if he's not healthy? Who's
then
the
you
quarterback?
Got a freshman.
Zach Wilson?
You got a freshman.
True freshman?
With one of these guys, it's going to be a freshman.
Critchlow? Jaren Hall? Like, I don't know.
It's not, I don't believe it's Critchlow, by the way. I'm going to say that twice.
So, obviously, the listeners just heard this, but you have not yet, but I want your take on it. So, Gurney said, basically, I'm going to paraphrase here, but he says Grimes should create a system to run the football, okay? That's what he should be doing based on current personnel and the situation that we're in, feature Squally Canada and Tula Tau. And Gurney said he believes Tula Tau will be back with the team.
Yeah, that was my first question. We think Tula Tau's coming back.
That's what Gurney says, and I always put my trust in the Brandon. So if that's the case, Matt, is that the offense we need to see from Grimes in his first year? Is it the Tula Tau and Squally show?
If Tula Tau's back, that's exactly what we need to do.
I think it's what you need to do, even if he's not. I think you could build an offense around Squally based on what we saw in the back half of the year. I think you're better off.
Yeah,
doing
I'm not as confident, but it's probably still true, right? If you're, I'm stuttering here, but.
But besides Bushman, who are the quarterbacks? Even if one of these guys steps
up,
who are they going to freaking throw to?
The problem is, it's your. Even without Tula Tau, your best options are probably running backs.
I think you're going to have to do some things. And the other part is, a lot of what I wanted the offense to have in the future is not going to happen yet because we don't have the wide receivers to run the offense that I think Grimes and others would want to run. You know what really helps take pressure off your quarterback? Some jet sweeps and inside screens to the wide receiver. I'm not sure we have wide receivers that can do that.
Right.
Right? You know what also helps take pressure off the quarterback? A few deep throws a game that you can complete that where somebody runs past the defense. I'm not sure we have wide receivers that can do that. You know, Bushman obviously is amazing, freshman All-American, all that. I think he'll get even better. But you can't throw 15 passes a game to Bushman. I mean, Mangum kind of tried that, right? So I don't know, Matt. I'm excited about Grimes. I just don't know. We'll really know until fall camp and what quarterbacks are on campus and healthy. What this offense is really going to look like.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. We just don't know.
We just don't know. So, Matt, let's talk about the college football playoff. So Holger on Facebook tells us, your guy's assessment of Alabama couldn't have been any more wrong. He does use the winking emoji, Matt. Boy, we were off.
Well, here's the deal. They got healthy. Yeah. But they're dinged up again already.
Here's the thing. We did not, I mean, we realistically, we both know Bama's a good team. I did not think they would stomp Clemson like they did. I mean, that was...
I honestly believed that Clemson would beat them.
So did I. And clearly the Bama defense had something else in mind. But Matt, on an excitement level 0 to 10, 10 being super excited, 0 being you're not even going to watch, how excited are you for the college football championship matchup of Georgia and Alabama?
I'm still like a 7 or an 8.
Yeah, me too. Because it's
college football playoff. I mean, I'm sitting there watching these games the other night, and I'm saying to myself, this is what we all wanted. We wanted playoff games. It's not perfect. It's not 8 teams. You know, we've got 2 teams from the SEC in here. We can argue about, and maybe we will in just a second, about a couple of teams who could have been in and not, right? But at the end of the day, we got a playoff in college football. Like, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Every single person should go watch it. Whether you can hate Alabama and Georgia all you want, but you got to send the message that we like this and we want more of it.
Well, I wanted Clemson and Oklahoma in the championship, but obviously that worked the opposite direction, Matt. So here's the deal. Ohio State kind of showed they might belong, right? I mean, they absolutely dismantled a decent USC team. UCF kind of showed maybe they belonged.
Yep.
By dismantling a very good Auburn team that beat Alabama.
Yep.
So, Matt, has your tune changed on UCF? Do you think they could have hung in this college football playoff?
I think they could have hung in the college football playoff.
But you didn't believe that a week ago.
I absolutely did not, but now they've proved it to me.
They have.
This is why you need an 8-team playoff. You give them the first round to prove that they can hang.
That's why they're not going to ever have an 8-team playoff.
See, they get into but if you have the 8-team playoff, UCF gets in, and then they beat Auburn, and they move into the next round.
But here's the thing, that they wouldn't have been against Auburn. They would have been against Georgia or Clemson. They would have been against a top seed, right?
They might have beat Clemson.
They might have. Here's the thing. I saw this tweeted out, and it was a UCF alum who basically said, UCF has been trying to schedule the big boys and has been denied. Okay? So they get knocked for a bad out-of-conference schedule. They didn't play anybody, but nobody will play them, right? So... Here's the problem with the entire system. You and I have talked about this a bunch. This system is rigged because the top conferences do not want to play with anybody else.
Right.
Right? And going to 8 teams, and that's why I don't think it's... I shouldn't say it won't ever happen, because I think it will eventually happen. I think they're going to delay it as long as they possibly can. I think there will have to be economic necessity before they actually do it.
But see, here's what I'd love to see happen.
Okay.
So the knock is UCF doesn't play anybody, right?
Right.
So
I don't think they get, by the way, I don't think they get in. If it's just an 8 where a committee gets to decide, there's no like you have to take the top G5 which candidate or whatever, I don't think they get in. They were ranked, what, 12th by the committee?
Yeah.
So they don't even get in if you just take the committee's rankings at face value.
Yeah, but the committee's not doing it that way. I think if they if the committee was setting up an 18 playoff, I think they rank UCF 8.
I don't think they do, dude. I think they absolutely keep them out. I don't think they put them in because that means a Power 5 team doesn't get in. Sending them to one of these bowl games, fine. Giving them a chance to play for the championship? I mean UCF is probably the bad example. There are some other non P5 better examples, Boise State, Utah, who am I missing? There's somebody else who I thought, you know, who in a top four should have been in for sure, right?
Right.
So I don't know, man. I don't know.
So what if all of these bubble teams got together and formed their own conference? Say you take a UCF. Maybe you take Memphis. You know, you hope, you know, and obviously as a BYU fan, I'm going to throw BYU into that loop.
Boise, you do it like a Boise. 10 or 12 team league.
And you just take and you're selective about kind of the top of what else, what is out there that's left.
Doesn't matter.
You know?
Doesn't matter.
Then is UCF's schedule good enough when they run the table?
Only if they can get some good out-of-conference games and win them. Right?
So it wouldn't matter. Really what you're saying is it wouldn't matter.
I don't think so.
They're going to have to play two or three P5 non-conference games and not against Vanderbilt and win them.
Correct. Correct. But look at what the committee did. I know what you're saying. I agree with you that they weren't actually seeding an 8-team tournament. So I get it. Okay? But look at what the committee did. They put UCF behind two-loss USC, who quite frankly, I don't know if they have a better resume than UCF, okay? Two-loss Penn State probably does have a better resume. Two-loss Miami, I don't think they have a better resume than UCF. They freaking lost to Pitt, right? Two-loss Washington were all, and they were just one spot ahead, four-loss Stanford. Right? Like,
that's crazy.
I look at that, and Matt, what I kind of say is, if they had an 18 playoff this year, UCF doesn't get it. There's no way. They put in, Auburn definitely gets in, right? So you would have had three SEC teams in. The eighth team would have been, and Wisconsin gets in. The eighth team would have been USC, Penn State, Miami, or Washington. Right? And I agree with you, maybe they don't pick USC here, whatever, but anywho. So who you got in the championship next week?
I think you got to take Bama.
I don't know. Georgia looks pretty good. What's the line on that game?
I don't know. I haven't looked.
Let's pull that up here.
But yeah, I mean, look at what they just did. You know, not getting into the SEC championship was probably the best thing that could have happened to them.
But that's the problem.
They played Mercer, then they played Auburn, and then they got time off. All those guys got healthy, and they got to kind of just look around and think about who they were going to have to play, knowing that it was probably going to be Clemson. If they could get in, it was going to be Clemson.
Mm. Yeah, but that's the problem, right? That's the problem. They lose that game against Auburn, and it benefits them?
Iron Bowl, which is, and system. I said this a couple weeks ago, the Iron Bowl, one of the great college football rivalry games, meant nothing this year.
Yeah, meant nothing.
We should be treating that stuff like a play-in.
Yeah, you lose it, you're out, right?
Right.
You lose it, you're out. That's how it should be. So Bama is favored by 4.5 points. Of course they are, right? I'm taking Georgia. Maybe it's more emotional than rational, but I'm going to go with Kirby Smart and Georgia. But you're going with
no way. This is like this is like Darth Vader and Darth Sidious. Well, maybe that's a terrible example.
That's a terrible example. I'm not sure who you're saying is going to win.
Yeah, I guess I just disagreed with myself.
You just disagreed with yourself in some strange, bizarre way.
Strike me down.
Yes. Yeah, that's a terrible emperor impersonation. All right, Matt, well, this has been fun as usual. Yeah, your terrible impression. Well, we'll be back next week with another podcast talking about basketball, talking about college football playoff. And quite frankly, I don't know how much more we'll have to talk about football, but we always seem to find some way to talk about BYU football.
There's always football to talk about.
And of course, we'll be talking about the college football championship, you know, stuff going on. Which by the way, having it on New Year's Day is so much better than awesome. New Year's Eve crap. It was such a good day of football.
That was awesome.
It was fantastic. A fantastic day of football. Though I did miss part of the Oklahoma-Georgia game. Because I honestly thought Oklahoma was going to run away with it. And I missed some of that third quarter. Because I was hanging out with the kids and I'm like, ah, whatever. Oklahoma's running away with it. They did not run away with it.
No, they did not. They ran away. But
we'll talk next week. And go Bulldogs.
Roll Tide.
Roll Tide.
I believe I just said that.
What? What? You have... There are people that are friends of yours in Louisiana listening to this podcast.
Listen, I'm just saying that because I think they're going to win the game.
They're not going to like either of our comments, quite frankly.
I can't in good conscience really cheer for either of these teams.
Good point.
But I'm not going to hate on Alabama just for being good.
No. They're the Patriots of college football.
Right.
Anyway. All right. Well, thanks everybody for downloading and listening, and we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars.